Hello, my name is Sarah Acton. I'm a landscape poet and I'm working with Martin Maudsley, the storyteller.
And we're hosting the Talking Tent together, which celebrates 60 years of the Dorset area of outstanding natural beauty, landscape, people and places.
I will be following the seasons of spring, summer and autumn this year outdoors through the Talking Tent events, the workshops, in conversations, these longer oral history interviews, and really in these interviews drilling down and asking people how they connect to a particular season, style, wildlife, passions, connections, well-being, everything that relates to them. And we're thinking about all of the varied landscapes in the Dorset area of natural beauty, from the massive Jurassic coastline with its stacked library of fossil records, which celebrate the whole of Earth history, to Iron Age hill forts, long barrows, rivers, fields, farms, forests, everything and everybody in between, from the last 60 years to the present and the next 60 years as well. Jane, we're just at the foot of the giant hill, aren't we, in Cernabbas?
Yes, we're looking at the steps towards the feet of the giant, where you see tourists toiling up, hoping that they'll see the giant better, and you always say, no, go to the viewing point.
The opposite side of the valley.
The opposite side of the valley, because the best you can see is just the soles of his feet. It's difficult to even begin to comprehend how big the thing is, because people always see aerial photographs of it.
I did do that myself last week. I didn't realise it was fenced off, and it you do get to see his feet, but it's better to see the whole giant, isn't it?
It is, yes, it is.
It's so beautiful here today. I should have said it's the Thursday, the 10th of June 2021, that's just for our records. And the trees are in their full greenery. It's just so beautiful and shady here.
Yes. There was evidence of quarrying further along, so I think in its time it was a very busy, noisy place. But now it feels very peaceful, and there's lots of quiet little paths that you can go up, and the dogs love looking for rabbits in all the brambles.
And
all the time there's this feeling that our own guardian spirit is up there.
Which is the giant.
Which is the giant.
Tell me a little bit more about him. I'm dying to know more.
Well, I feel I have a personal investment in him, because in 2019 I helped with the rechalking. And as I was walking up the hill, the best way to get to the top is actually to go up the steps and then go round just above the brambles.
That way.
Which is counterintuitive, but you get there exactly the same time as the people who are going directly up, and it's a lot safer. And as I was walking round the shoulder of the hill, you could hear everyone with their steel tampers tamping the chalk down. And every so often, just like when a crowd are clapping, everyone would get into unison.
Oh.
So all the tamping, and the whole ground was shaking, and it felt like the heartbeat of the giant.
Mm. That's pretty special. And I suppose it gave you a sense of the effort that it takes, and it took originally for whoever first made this giant on the hillside of the valley.
It really, really does. And the thing that has amazed me by the latest archaeology that's been done is that when they cut through the foot of the giant, they found lots of layers, and they could identify all the layers. And so they identified the historical layers, and then they could tell that there was a gap where it didn't seem to be being cared for, and then all these other historical layers. And one of the layers that showed the most evidence, the most effort, was, I think, in 1250, where they actually really dug it out about that far. About a foot. And they've dug through some of the other archaeological layers. So it wasn't just going up there and scraping the moss off, which does have to be done quite frequently, really. it was actually serious rebuilding. And the feeling now of having been part of the rechalking in 2019, that I am really a child of the giant who has been part of centuries of people who have been caring
looking
for
after him.
Him.
And he has been there an awfully long time. And as you said, a guardian spirit over this particular valley and over the people here. Do you think that he has a big influence on the lives of the people who live here?
I feel that everyone here has a relationship a bit like he's an uncle. And people will say, I went up on the giant, meaning Giant Hill, but yeah. I went up on the giant. And everyone has a bit of a chuckle because the tourists come in and there's this sort of tittering of, oh, look what he's got. And we're going, oh, yawn. And even the old matrons, even the elderly matrons go, oh, yawn, you know, not seen one of those before. and so it is really interesting because sometimes tourists come and they the giant calls people to belong to him, and a lot of people who don't live anywhere near feel that they have a very special relationship with him as well. Mm. And sometimes I get the feeling people think you who live there don't understand, and it's possibly a different sort of understanding, but that is the value of he is mythology writ large. And a myth speaks to very, very deep levels of the psyche. And wherever you are, he's going to be speaking to you at some level.
Hmm. That's sending a little chill up my spine as we stand here right below him. And what do you think it symbolises for people today, he symbolises, or does it matter? Is it more of a grand mythology of our ancient ancestors who've gone before us?
I think, I first off want to say, don't undervalue mythology.
No.
Because mythology, before we had psychology and psychotherapy and psychiatry, there was mythology, and it's all about speaking to the psyche, and everyone through their life path needs to find meaning in some way.
I believe that as well. I enjoy living myth and living landscape.
But having said that, I feel that there will be lots of different people for whom he means lots of different things. For me, my starting the Giant Festival 4 years ago, the CERN Giant Festival, came about because as I was walking over the hill, I was having an increasing feeling that he was calling me to do something.
Yeah.
And before we moved here, we were called here by the well. We both fell in love with the well. But I wasn't really thinking about the giant at all. And one morning before we moved here, but after my husband had accepted a job locally, I woke up and the first thought in my head is the giant is Orion. Mm-hmm. And so I went down and Googled Orion, and sure enough, you get all these classical pictures of a man with a club and his arm outstretched.
Yeah.
Quite often he has a bow and his arm outstretched. And so I've always thought of him as Orion, and like many people, I feel I have a sort of weird relationship with the Orion in the sky. When Orion appears in the autumn, I always say, oh, welcome back. I'm glad to see you again. And so I began thinking, well, what am I being called to do? And I grew up on the Gulf Coast of Texas, where a quarter of the petrochemicals of that country are manufactured within about 20 miles of where I grew up.
Right.
And when we left in 1976, there was a billboard in the airport that said, relocate your business to Houston. We have no environmental legislation. And yet I grew up with a mother who had grown up in England and had a very, very deep love of the natural world. And so for me, the the natural world has always been, and our relationship with it and how we misunderstand it and abuse it has always been a very big thing for me. The part of the Gulf Coast I grew up in is now a textbook example of land sinking, because so much oil and water has been pumped out that now there is no longer a Seabrook dockyard, because it sank under the water so many times that they gave up putting dirt on top to build it up again.
Yeah.
And so I did a ecological biology degree at university, and I've been involved one way or another with ecological education ever since. And I've come more and more to feeling that people need to have a personal relationship with all this around us.
In order to love it, in order to feel joint responsibility, and to just foster that relationship, exactly, that connectedness.
Exactly. And if you come out and go, oh, those aphids, they put sticky spit on my car again.
How inconvenient.
Or, oh, not rain. And so the purpose of the Giant Festival is to create as many avenues as possible for people to explore their own relationship, particularly with the landscape in this area, through history, through food, through geography, through natural history, anything else I can think of. And so I was thinking I need to do this, and everyone said, oh, that's a great idea, but we're too busy. And so I thought, oh, it won't happen this year. And then I went back to Texas, and it was a high school reunion. And I was there for a week, and on the Sunday I was there, I went back to look at the manned spacecraft center, because my school was across the road from it. And for me, that growing up in the 60s and 70s, it has always symbolized the triumph of hope over fear.
Yeah.
And so I was looking around it, and then they were talking about the Orion project, and I thought, oh, it's sort of obvious, because it's people and spacecraft in the sky, so that's not that weird. And then on the Tuesday, I then went to the place where I grew up, where the whole hamlet was compulsory purchased in the 60s, and the whole place was, all the houses were pushed over the cliff.
Oh, right.
So that one day a factory could be built there. And a factory was never built there. And after 30 years, it had turned into a sort of nature reserve, because they built fences around it and things. Oh. And then after 30 years, someone decided to turn it into a cruise liner port. So I'm not quite sure why they thought cruise liners would want to dock in the middle of chemical industry, but that's what they thought. And so I went to have a look around, and I was talking to a security guard, because in Texas they tend to shoot first and ask questions later. And he had a badge which said Orion Engineering Company. And for me, that whole thing has always... And he was telling me that, surprise, surprise, no ships wanted to dock there.
No.
And they were trying to sell it, and it was costing them $23 million a year. In order to stop the whole thing degrading, so they couldn't sell it. And so I thought this symbolizes the sort of human cost of human folly and human greed. And then on the Thursday I came back, and when I got home I looked at the Facebook, and it said, have you seen the Orionid meteor shower yet? It peaked last night. And I was thinking, I was suspended between heaven and earth when that was happening. So for me, that was the three things, and I thought, it's just got to happen. So it began in a small way and has been expanding ever since.
And that was about 4 years ago?
4 years ago. Obviously last year we had to cancel it very much at the last minute because of COVID. This year we're using some of the things that were lined up last year, and we're going to have it in July. It's usually in April, leading up to Beltane, when the Morris men go up and dance on top of the hill.
So it'll be now, did you say July, so in midsummer?
It's going to be the last half of July, yeah.
And we're just moving towards solstice. It's come around quite quickly because spring was so late. It feels like the solstice is suddenly upon us, although of course it...
Yes, of course all the plants are going, oh, whoops, I need to catch up because I need to get where I should be in June.
Yes. Yeah. So what's going to happen up on the giant for solstice? Does anything happen with
it? Well, it doesn't normally, not apart from maybe the odd person might go up. I think maybe the Morris might be planning to go up there, but I haven't actually talked to them or looked at their website yet just to confirm that, but I've heard rumours that that's what they're planning to do to celebrate, hopefully.
For the giant... hopefully for everything.
Yes.
For the giant festival, is that reviving, I'm sure, centuries and centuries of festivals that have been happening here on the hill?
Well, that's
at Beltane.
That's an interesting question. The Morris men have been going up for something over 30 years, so they haven't always been up there. There are stories about there being a maypole up there in the 19th century, which I read this just after I came. I have a funny feeling that some hellfire preacher was preaching against this pagan custom. But the one of the interesting things that's come out as a result of the latest archaeology, and medieval historians are very excited, because Edwold, our late local saint, there is a legend that he was, had been told that he would see a silver fountain where he should be his, become a hermit, and that he was walking along a hill and he saw this fountain and he planted his staff, a bit like Joseph of Arimathea. And so some of the medieval historians are saying, maybe it's not a club, maybe it's a staff that's beginning to sprout into roots and leaves. And one of the accounts in a hagiography that was written was said, and the ash tree is there still. So that's one of the things that intrigues me, is possibly could the maypole have been where the ash tree once was in the time of, in the 10th, 11th, maybe 12th century. And then, of course, there's the Black Death in around about 1300, and it seems that that's when things sort of... There are so few people who are living in the countryside because half of them died.
So, not necessarily a revival, but carrying through some of the traditions that...
No one knows what they were. Some of the medieval historians were postulating that on his saint's day, which was August 29th, that there could have been processions back and forth because the medieval church was really into processions.
Yes.
And that would make sense, that there could be, from the preaching cross over in the cemetery, there could have been some sort of procession. That makes a lot of sense to me. So again, I think, like we were saying, the mythology or the meaning, that each generation finds something that's appropriate to their type and condition.
Yes.
And at sometimes that blossoms into some sort of ceremony.
And hopefully creates connectivity to seasons and the seasons passing through, because I wanted to just ask you how important you felt it was that we do celebrate the seasons.
That's why my husband Jonathan, the vicar of Cerne Abbas, has written several liturgies. We do at Wassail, and it was great when we were doing the Wassail, because the last place we lived, they didn't really get it. It was quite an urban situation. And they came along because they wanted to support us, and it was a bit of a jolly.
Some cider.
But when we came here, the very first time we did a Wassail, people were saying, it's all about connecting to the land and the seasons. And we said, yes.
Looking after the trees
you
and the
got
harvest
it.
And the abundance. And
yeah, you got it. So Imolc, we do down at the well, and so that's thinking about the lambs being born and what's happening at that time of year. And then Beltane is very much well, things have started to grow, so let's hope that they grow very well. So, and all these things, every religion has its way of relating to the seasons. Mm. And I'm in several pagan and Christian Facebook groups, and often pagans will say, oh, the Christians have stolen from the pagans. And I keep on saying, we all live on the same planet. And in the end, the seasons are a reflection of what's going on in each of us. Each of us have summer times and autumn times and spring times and winter times. And by exploring that level of ourselves in the context of looking at the natural world, and there you will see wisdom, is one of the deepest learning experiences you can have, because then you are actually living amongst it as well as living within it.
And of course it's common to all. It's a common thread for all of us. We can all connect to the seasons really easily by just spending time outside and getting to know our local area, I suppose. And what's your favourite time of year, Jane?
Oh, I just love the spring. I look forward to the first aconite and then the first snowdrop.
Oh.
And as far as I'm concerned, I'm sorry to say, but really by the time it's got to the end of May, it's all over.
Oh.
And everything's
which is about
now.
It was a bit different this year.
But I just love it when there's all the fresh greens and so everything has come out late this year, but normally it's getting a bit dusty and a bit moth-eaten, and I ought to be rejoicing that the caterpillars and the insects are all having a lovely time eating it all. But for me, it's spring is where it's at. I have a very good friend, for her, autumn is the big time, so I'm trying to love autumn for her sake.
I like that, thank you. Thank you very much, Jane. It's a real pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We know at the Talking Tent that by talking together, we remember and rehydrate memories and names and people. And also, by sharing story, we connect to landscape and community and our own sense of belonging and appreciation and love of particular place. This is our commonality. So we look forward to hearing from you. More from us soon. Bye.